This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
David Jenkins, thank you very much. Happy Easter weekend to everyone. Hope you're having a pleasant weekend so far. Going to be gorgeous in terms of the weather, so get out and take advantage of the nice weather across mid-Illinois today. Cardinal baseball for you later on this afternoon from Cincinnati. We'll have the pregame coverage beginning at 2:15 on WSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. Well, it was certainly strange on Good Friday last night to be at a high school football game. You know, we're accustomed to being at a baseball or a softball game on Good Friday, but certainly not high school football. And we wound up having two good ball games on the radio for you last night. Carlinville beat Hillsboro 23-14. Going to catch up with Chad Easterday momentarily. Our second broadcast feature last night out of the Sangamo Conference went down to the final minute. Williamsville scored with 36 seconds left to knock off North Mac 42-35. And you can find both those ball games in podcast form at WSMIRadio.com. The Williamsville North Mac game should be chugging its way along, and if it's not up there yet, it will be momentarily. Looking at some scores from last night back into the South Central Conference, the Southwestern Piesaw Birds 3-0, I think for the first time since 2002, as they beat Vandalia last night 21-7. Gillespie beat Roxana 22-14, and Greenville down Staunton 36-0 as the Comets, their 63rd shutout in program history. Seems like a lot to me. I don't know the correlation, but it seems like a lot of shutouts to me. In the Sangamo Conference, it was Athens over Auburn 34-18. Moreau Forsyth beat Pleasant Plains 74-0. New Berlin topped Riverton 40-7, and Pittsfield beat Porta 33-6. In the Cahokia Conference, now this is the small schools division. Nokomis is in the Cahokia here this year. They beat Carlisle 41-0 last night, so Nokomis is off to a 3-0 start. Breeze Central beat Wood River 44-6. Dupo winners over Westland 30-13. Columbia tops Salem 37-18. And Redbud beat Madison 48-0. In the Apollo Conference last night, it was Effingham over Mattoon 28-0. Central State 8, Rochester beat Normal U High 49-7. Jacksonville over Lanphier 34-0. And Springfield High beat MacArthur 27-14. In the WIVC South last night, Greenfield Northwestern winners over Carrollton 20-6. West Central beat North Green 55-6. And Calhoun topped Pleasant Hill 28-8. WIVC North last night saw Jacksonville Rout beat Brown County 46-14. And Minden Unity came back and beat Beardstown 35-19. In the Mississippi Valley Conference, it was Waterloo over Jersey 28-21. Civic Memorial beat Granite City 41-6. Triad over Muskuta 6-0. Highland beat Collinsville 27-20. And in the Southwestern Conference, it was East St. Louis beating Edwardsville 52-21. In a game heard last night on WSMI FM 106, Carlinville went into Toppertown and beat Hillsboro 23-14. And we're happy to be joined on the phone right now by Carlinville head coach Chad Easterday. And Chad, good morning, sir. How'd you like coaching football on Good Friday?
It was a little different atmosphere this morning. Last night, obviously there was football game, so I guess Good Friday has it. I don't want to sound rude. It had its purpose.
Yes.
It was weird coaching football that night, that's for sure. So,
no doubt about it. And Chad, this was a heck of a ball game last night, and I guess a lot of ways, just kind of a typical Carlinville-Hillsboro game.
Yeah, you know, both programs pride themselves on physicality. So, you know, when you go over there and you know what you're going to get into right away when you get that in terms of that. So, you know, that is what it is. I hate that sentence. We talked about that last week, but, you know, Duff and I have the same philosophy there. You got to do a few things really, really well, and being physical and blocking and tackling is one of them. So, you know, we got a lot of that last night. We made some errors, but you know, other than that, we came out with the win. That's always a good thing.
Chad, I think my favorite play of the night, Bobby Seale, I think it was a 63-yard touchdown run. That was fantastic. But Chase Michaels, the pulling guard, he was out leading the way, and that I enjoyed the heck out of that play.
You know, Chase is one of them special kids. You know, he's been in the program now. He leads our defense. He's been starting at linebacker for 3 years. So, you know, him doing those things have become kind of the norm, so to speak. So, but it was nice to see, you know, I thought we did a better job up front blocking than we did last week against Pena. So those things were some very good positive things that came out of last night.
And I enjoy when kids have an impact on the game. They don't really touch the ball. Michaels had the great block to spring the touchdown. He plugged the hole several times and stuck topper defenders and recovered a fumble. And so many times we get caught up in offense and how many yards you threw for, how many yards the tailback had. But I enjoy it when I see a kid really dominate the game without really touching the ball.
Yeah, you know, and he, obviously he has the capability of doing that. And to be honest with you, he leads. We just talked about the defense, but you know, we could. He's obviously the focal point there. But like Zach Reed, our front seven last night, I thought the last couple weeks have been really, really tough up there. So you know, that's different for us because you know it's a different identity than we've had before. And you know, people are you know used to seeing one type of thing, and we're providing another. And you know, our front seven, I thought last night, did a great job holding the fort down against a very, very improved Hillsborough team.
Well, and really, your defense in the second half, I mean, they had to stand on their head. There wasn't a lot of scoring in the third and fourth quarter, and it came down to Hillsborough, got back in the ball game, down a touchdown with possession, and boy, your defense came up with another big stand. Zach Reed got the safety, and Chad, I thought your defense outside of the second half of the Pena game, to me, has been getting consistent pressure this spring season.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely is our strong point right now in our season. It's the thing that's carried us the most. You know, we had some penalties there in the first half that hurt us. We had a fumble, you know, marched the ball down the field, didn't stick it in the end zone, those types of things. And our defense has been that focal point for the season that's been able to, you know, I don't want to use the term bail us out, but it did. It bailed us out of some tough situations. So you might as well call that spade a spade because,
right.
I mean, we stick that ball in at the start of the second half or we don't blow the coverage, you know, that complexity or the identity of that game looks a lot different than it did. So, you know, don't get me wrong, credit goes to Hillsborough for making that play there before the half and that type of stuff. But, you know, we got a lot of work to do on putting away people and doing some fundamental things right. I thought, you know, our third down was really good except for three plays. We gave up three third and longs that we know are not traditionally what we do, those types of things. So, but I think that's spring football. I think that's pandemic football. I hate to even use that, but, you know, those are things that you cure in the summer with 7-on-7 and camps and those types of things. So,
yeah, no, those are just real factors this year. Is it's going to be hard, I think, to get the consistency week in, week out that coaches are accustomed to. And, Chad, we didn't get a chance to talk last week, and I know you always like to look forward, but I want to take you back to the Pena game, if I could, for a moment. First half, your defense spent the entirety of that half in the backfield. I think 7 sacks in the first half. And then the second half, really the exact opposite. There was no pressure at all. What, I guess, just the simple question, what changed?
Well, I tell you what, I mean,
simple question, hard answer.
Nope, it's not. We got to have a little bit more productivity on offense. We can't go 3 and out. Some of those guys, we got some one-way players and, those kids we got gassed and didn't provide enough pressure there that we did. You know, I think that's some of our youth showing up in some spots, those types of things. So, you know, those things add to the mix and everything. But last night we did a better job of controlling the ball a little bit. You know, some of those, like that first drive in the third quarter, some of our defensive guys got a heck of a good rest. They weren't on the field 3 times, and we didn't do that last week. And we did that this week, which was the difference in the ball game.
And then last week, Chad, you got taken out on the sideline. I don't remember ever seeing you get taken out on the sideline, but, man, you bounce right back up just like you teach.
I tell you what, I've normally positioned myself. I've seen a lot of coaches go down, so I won't lie to you. You've watched me coach a long time. I'm either 20 yards ahead of the play or 20 yards behind the play. The older I get, I try to be smarter. Why I was standing, I still don't have a clue, to be real honest with you. And I just froze. He came at me, and I'm like, I looked around, and there was nowhere to go, and down I went. So, you know, I have a perfect little helmet decal right on my thigh that worked pretty good. And I tell you what, I think Mason Duckles felt worse than I did because he got up and was, oh, my God, Coach, are you fine? I said, bud, get out there. You're on defense. Let's go. I said, so I didn't have a mouthpiece. I just bit my tongue.
Oh, man.
Son of a gun, that's for sure.
Well, I tell you what, as a player, there's no worse feeling than taking out your own coach. You're thinking, oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you, I have one of the greatest coaching staffs in the world. We have a great relationship, and we are complete. I don't know what the correct political term is on the radio, but we have a good time. Boy, I haven't lived that one down for a whole week. I tell you what, it's been on huddle. It's been on every time I walk in the locker room. Coach Easterday's taking a lick on the film. So they've had a lot of fun with it, that's for sure.
Well, Chad, that might wind up being on your all-time highlight reel. You might never live that one down.
Oh, no, it's coming. I mean, I had ice bags sitting there on Monday morning on my chair in the whole nine yards, so everyone got a good laugh at it. No one had any sympathy for me, and I don't want any, so that's fine by me. So.
Chad, one final question here. Next week, I think you got Southwestern and the Piasau Birds off to a 3-0 start, so this will be a different-looking Southwestern team than you've seen in years past.
Yeah, Pat's got them moving, and they got a purpose, and they play with a purpose. And we watched film this morning at the coaches' meeting, and they do a lot of things really, really well. So, we'll have our hands full as always. So, it's always nice to see. And Mr. Keith and I have been good friends for a long time. You know, he did a great job with Roxanna, moved up the road there, and he's going to get that program turned around, and he's doing it right now. So, you know, that was a big win for them against Vandalia. So I don't know much about Vandy either. I don't know if they lost. With this not having a nine-game schedule, it's kind of weird because you only focus on the six teams that you play.
Right.
So, I mean, like, I don't know. I know, but we haven't researched the depth of Vandalia. What did they have last year? Because I don't know if you've had certain coaches talking. I don't want to waste your show, but it's kind of hard to figure out personnel because you haven't seen a lot of these kids play. I mean, it's been a long time, so you don't know what they're – other schools look like until you get some film on them. So
that is an interesting point, though, Chad, because, I mean, football coaches, you guys, you've got your structured system, and you know who you're playing, when you're playing. But this year, it's completely different. And not, I mean, for the kids, it's all different. But from a coaching perspective, the preparation is not what it normally is.
No, I mean, the months of, for us, and I don't know how other staffs do it, but, I mean, we normally take about three weeks off right after our last game. And then Coach Bergini, Coach Steiner, my coaching staff, we go back through every film, chart every senior that's leaving the program. We got a folder on everybody, who's coming back, who was this, who was that, just your best guesses and stuff like that. And you don't have that file this year. So, that's kind of weird to even say that you don't have it, but it's you don't have it. It's just not there. Some kids or sophomores, when this started, and are starting as juniors in their first football game, and they haven't even played a Monday night game. You know, we have a few of those. So those are really some weird stats when you start putting it on paper.
Chad Easterday, the head coach of Carlinville, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time, and hopefully that helmet decal will subside here shortly.
Yo, it's getting better by the minute, so it'll all be good.
All right. Chad, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, see you guys.
That's Chad Easterday, the head football coach at Carlinville. And yeah, David, he ain't living that down for a while.
He's not an old guy, but it's plays like that that make you realize your age. your body realizes what your age
well,
is.
Well, and I mean, it is, unless you've actually stood on the sideline, mm-hmm. you don't really appreciate how fast yeah. they are getting there. Like, I remember in college, I was holding the sound bubble, you know, yeah. that you see. That was my job one Saturday afternoon at Eastern, and I got taken out.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that situation, they told you got to keep the sound bubble so you get the noise. You know, so I got the sound,
yeah.
but it happened fast. You know, you think, hey, he's getting kind of close to me, and then your legs are gone.
Yeah. It's when you see it in the professional game, too, you know, you don't even think about those guys who get knocked down necessarily, who are standing out there or whatnot. They're just collateral damage, I guess.
Well, I remember, you know, Joe Paterno got his leg snapped.
Yeah.
Late in his career.
Yeah.
I think Don DeBrino, when he would have been at Mount Olive, I think I remember seeing him get taken out one time, but ain't nothing slowing down Don DeBrino.
No.
If you take out Don DeBrino, you better check the football player and make sure that he didn't hurt himself.
He looks like
Don's fine.
Yeah, he looks like he could still lay a few hits on some players out there.
Well, he'd lay me out. No doubt about
me
it.
Me too.
We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and talk Staunton boys soccer with their head coach, Matt Larson. They should be on the bus, I believe, en route. So we will talk to Matt Larson coming up next.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
David, thank you very much. Cardinal baseball today from Cincinnati. Game 2 of 162. Pregame coverage underway at 2:15 on WSMI AM 1540, FM 106.9, and 92.9. And I enjoyed opening day. Crystal clear FM quality, 92.9 from my house. Boy, it's nice listening to the Redbirds on the FM dial. So FM 106.9, FM 92.9, and AM 1540, your home for Cardinal baseball all season long. Looking at some high school action today in football, you got Marquette at Freeburg. That'll be at 6:30 tonight. The Apollo Conference has Taylorville hosting Mount Zion at 7, Lincoln hosting Muhammad Seymour at 2. Central State 8, Griffin hosting Glenwood at 1. WIVC North, Triopia at Camp Point Central. That's at 1 o'clock in Pawnee, and Metro East Lutheran in 8-man football from Pawnee today at 2 o'clock. Boys soccer action today. Staunton is en route to Springfield to take on Lutheran, and joining us on the phone right now is Staunton head soccer coach Matt Larson, live from the bus. How's it going, Matt?
Hey, Tim, how's it going? How are you?
Hey, we're doing fantastic. And, you know, the bus rides are always a unique part of the sporting experience. But obviously, in the COVID season, whatever you want to call it, it's a little bit different than normal.
Absolutely. You know, masks are required at all times on buses, the games, everything. It's just a weird time now and a different season and just a different monster altogether. But we always love the bus rides, and we try to encourage our players to take the bus to and from the game if they can, because there's just so many experiences and memories you can make on these things.
Well, and that's exactly right. I mean, once your playing days are over, you know, the games, you recall certain games and moments for sure. But honestly, it's the moments in practices, it's the moments in the locker room, and it's the moments on the bus that you really take with you all those years later.
Absolutely. We always have, on our senior night, we always have our kids write down their favorite memory of playing over the years. And, you know, you'd be surprised how many kids don't put, like, you know, scoring a goal against this team or beating this team to win a conference game. It's always, you know, riding the bus ride home and some of the silly, goofy things they do on buses. And we're just hoping that we're not getting obscene on these things and making people upset as they're driving past them.
Hey, you got to let the high school kids be high school kids, though, don't you?
Exactly.
Well, Matt, talk to us a little bit here about boys soccer in the spring. Of course, girls soccer in the spring, that's the norm. But for the boys, it's different. So talk about the process here in the early stages of this season and what it was like getting your team ready to play.
Well, and we're just, you know, just kind of back up a second. We're just fortunate to even have a season.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've talked to our kids, and they were thrilled to death because originally it was looking like we weren't going to get anything at all. So just to be able to even play, we're super thankful for it. And I've been trying to tell my kids to be grateful for it and take every opportunity they get. So, you know, we're very thrilled to play. Now, that being said, you know, the timing isn't great. Obviously, we don't get a postseason. And then we, you know, we've never really played in spring, obviously. So we're dealing with the rain, a lot of rain outs, things like that, which I know our baseball coaches, softball coaches, and, you know, girls soccer and track, and all these, they're used to that stuff,
right.
But we're not. So we're getting a lot of rain outs and then postponements and things like that. And on a short season as it is, it's kind of a shame because, you know, we just want to play, and I know a lot of other coaches are feeling the same way. So we were glad the other day we actually played at Harlemville. They switched the game to their house because they have a new turf field, which helps tremendously keep off all the water. So we were grateful to get that game in.
Did your kids enjoy playing on that turf?
They did. We usually do about one game every year on turf, you know, whether we mean to or not. And it's just a different experience. You always get that true role on the ball. So your kids are used to a certain type of pass and have a little bit of a weight on the ball, and they send it and it goes flying. So it's kind of an interesting adjustment on the fly. And some of these teams that play on turf all the time, they have a little bit of an advantage, you know, because they know how that ball can roll.
Talk with Matt Larson here, the Staunton boys soccer coach. And Matt, talk to me about the seniors on your squad. Of course, no postseason, as you alluded to. So for the seniors, they know when their last game's going to be. So what has been their mindset here for their final soccer season?
Well, and we have a great group of seniors this year. They're kind of
the core of our team. We have six of them this year, and you know, it just numbers are down overall in general, and they make up the majority of our team right now. It's just kind of a shame, but they are looking at it like, you know, every chance they get is just a great opportunity to come out and play and improve what they've been working towards these last 4 years and trying to help us build the program. And we've got three senior captains that have just kind of taken things on their shoulders this year. One of my seniors actually stepped up, and he took over the role of goalkeeper for us, and he's actually our fourth goalkeeper we've had this season already. So we kind of got a weird situation there, but that's what you want your captain to do, is to step up and do things like that, make sacrifices for your teams, and he was glad to do it. So with our kids, it's not so much like, you know, they're going to be sad when it's over, for sure. But I've always said, you know, don't cry because it's over, or smile because it happened, you know?
You should put that on a bumper sticker right there. That's good. I like that. Hey, you know, you're talking about the goalie, and soccer, you know, is unique to me in the standpoint of you got your goalie, but if your plan works right, he won't have to do anything.
Exactly. Yeah, and we're kind of more of a defensive-minded team this year. We're having trouble scoring goals right now offensively, so we kind of knew that going in. We have all four of our remaining black backline starters, and we were going to have our keeper back. We had an ineligibility issue. We had an injury. We had a manager step in and try it for a game. He didn't really care for it. So it's just kind of a weird situation this year with everything else going on top of it. So we appreciate our goalkeeper stepped up. He's made a lot of big saves for us recently, and he's just playing a role that he's not familiar with, but he's a big, tall, lanky kid, and that really helps back there as a goal. He's got a mindset for it, and he knows what to do.
So your team manager said, I don't think so. No.
He did very much. He helped us out. He's been managing our team for the last 3 years. And he was like, hey, coach, you know, I've always wanted to try it. I've always been a goalie in practices and things like that, you know, and not practices, but pickup games, mm-hmm. things like that. And he said, what do you think? And I said, yeah, you got to get your paperwork in. You got to get physical, all these other things, you know, you got to get the practices in and stuff. So he tried. He did everything he could. He did that first game. And afterwards, I said, well, what did you think? He goes, honestly, I hated it. And I said, well, you know, I don't blame you if it's something you don't want to do. We obviously love you as a manager. But, you know, if you can't do it, don't worry about it. So he was trying to help out for the team, and we appreciate that. But that's kind of where it's not really on him to make that decision. I said, right. He's got enough players.
I love the honesty. I hated it. No good.
Oh, God. He's an honest kid. I love it. Yeah.
Matt, what do you expect today? You're going up to Springfield to take on Lutheran. What are you hoping to get today?
Well, and we're just hoping for some good weather today. We've been playing lately, and we've had cold games, rain games, and stuff. So it looks like it's going to be a beautiful day today. I don't know much about the Crusaders. I will say that. But I know, like, Springfield teams are always pretty good. They're always well coached. They're always ready to play. So we're going to have our hands full today, and I'm hoping our kids are ready to go this early in the morning, you know?
All right. Sounds good. Matt, where are you at on the interstate right now?
Well, Coach Churchill's driving our bus for us. As you know, he wears about 10 hats for us on Sun. So we're just north of, looks like we just passed Raymond there. So
all right.
We're coming north now.
Sounds good. Tell Ed I said hi.
I will. I'll let him know. And real quick, I just want to mention that my father, Tim, I don't know if you ever met him or not. He passed away this year. So we're kind of dedicating this season to him. So love you, Dad. And I know you're watching the Peach game. So appreciate your time, sir.
All right, Matt, thank you so much, and best of luck today.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Have a good one. Thanks for having
me. You too. Matt Larson, the head soccer coach for Staunton, as they are en route to Springfield Lutheran. And, you know, Ed Herschel, every district, I was going to say small district, but really it doesn't matter the size of the district, but for a small district specifically, you need dudes like Ed Herschel. As you said, he wears all sorts of hats. He's been the assistant coach for multiple sports, driving the bus today. And yeah, without people like Ed Herschel around the area, just the programs don't run as smooth as they do. So good luck to Staunton today. They're at Lutheran. Elsewhere in boys soccer today, Gillespie is at Wood River. That'll be at the Wood River Skate Park. North Mac hosting SHG. Roxana will be at Pena. Taylorville is at Charleston. Lanphier is at Athens, and Pleasant Plains will be at Glenwood. High school volleyball today. Calhoun is at Greenfield Northwestern. Riverton will be at Springfield, and Roxana will be at Civic Memorial. Hillsboro, they are traveling to Lincolnwood today. The JV game will begin at 10 o'clock, and Hillsboro's head coach Emily Zimmerman, good enough to join us here this morning. She has bypassed the bus ride to join us here on Sports Saturday. And Emily, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time, and I'm sorry you get to miss the bus ride.
No, that's okay. I said I do enjoy the bus rides, and, you know, I, in listening to the previous conversation with the Staunton soccer coach, it's definitely something that, you know, the girls really look forward to. You know, they have just as many memories from that as they do from moments in the games and moments of their season. But, you know, sometimes I lose service between Butler and Raymond, so I was a little nervous that if I stayed on the bus, I might drop a signal or something.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And talk to me about the Topper volleyball season so far. I mean, just like everybody else, it is weird to be playing volleyball in spring.
It really is. It's funny, one day after practice, this was about 2 or 3 months ago, it was really nice, or 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was really nice outside. Football was coming off the field from practice, and for a second, I thought it was September. I just thought it was September. We've been having a really, a really good season so far. It's short, and, you know, we've got to make the most of the time that we have, but we had an early loss to Roxana in 3, and a loss to Staunton, which we have them again in 2 next week. But yeah, we're 4-2, and I just feel like we're playing hard, and I'm really proud of the effort that the girls bring to the floor. You know, they're having fun. I tell them every time we get ready to take the floor, I'm like, work hard and have fun. And I feel like when they're out there and enjoying themselves, you know, giving it everything they can on the floor, it makes a big difference. And they're just enjoying it, and I'm enjoying being a part of it.
Yeah, if you play hard, everything else just kind of takes care of itself, it seems. And, you know, no postseason for volleyball, of course, but when you play in the South Central Conference, every night kind of feels like a playoff game.
Yes, it does. We have such a tough conference. And, you know, that's every game that we've played thus far is a conference game. So it's a challenge. We've got a really strong volleyball conference. We've done very well in the conference the last couple of years. Last year, our only 2 losses were to Pena and Roxana. And so, you know, I feel like it's every night, kind of like you said, it's an intense game, and you just, it's usually close, you know, or it could go 3 sets, and, you know, you have to bring your A game just like you would in, you know, a postseason or a tournament setting, so.
Talking with Emily Zimmerman here, the Hillsboro volleyball coach, and Emily, talk to me about your squad this year in terms of what are the strengths of this year's Topper team?
Well, we have, I'm dressing 10 girls on varsity, and 7 of those 10 are seniors. So we have a lot of leadership, and that's really helped us a lot so far. I think they love playing together. They realize that, you know, unfortunately this season was kind of robbed from them early on, and they want to make the most of what they have. We've got, you know, leadership on the floor. We've got leadership when they're off the floor. And just being a great example to the underclassmen and the other kids. I'm really proud of our senior class. And I just think we've got some strength. Offensively, we're doing a really great job attacking the ball. Lainey Rupert, she's a sophomore, honestly didn't even play JV last year. And she has stepped up and is starting varsity and doing really well. Allie DeVore is our senior libero, and she's all over the place. She, the other night, saved a ball up at the 10-foot line and then ran all the way back to the end line and saved it again. You know, she's just really doing an excellent job. They all are. Our setters are 2 seniors, so they really do a great job of setting up the offense. And, you know, it's a special group of girls, and I really enjoy being with them and, you know, seeing them come out and play together. So it's just, overall, I'm enjoying the season, and I just feel like offensively we've kind of turned it on. And then defensively, you know, I've got some strength at the net. Our blocking is pretty strong, and our back row defense, we've been working a lot more on reading the hitter and trying to put ourselves in a position if our block doesn't get a first touch on the ball. And, you know, we've got 4 weeks to do it all, but it's coming together.
And Emily, I feel like sometimes when I'm watching volleyball, it's like organized chaos. Like, it's just like the ball's going everywhere, but the girls, they know exactly what they're doing. And it makes me think of the Mike Tyson line where he talks about everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And from a volleyball perspective, you know, you can have a great plan, but you mentioned the ability to scramble and dig balls out and keep points alive. Boy, that's huge.
Oh, so huge. And we talk about that a lot. You know, I say there are teams that I feel are maybe equally fundamentally as sound as they are. You know, we really push the first couple weeks of a normal season on just honing in on fundamentals. And this year, of course, we didn't have as much time to do that. But I've always said, you can go out there and play anybody, whether you think you are physically more fundamentally sound than they are. What's going to ultimately be a deciding factor in the end result is the hustle and just putting yourself out there and knowing that the goal is, hey, the ball can't touch the floor. So we're going to hustle and we're going to work hard and we're going to make sure that doesn't happen.
And from a fundamental perspective, obviously you alluded to it, just completely different this year in terms of trying to hone in on those fundamentals. But have you sensed here as they've gotten more practice time that it's kind of coming back to them slowly but surely?
Oh, most definitely. We said, like, we're into our third week. We just finished our third week of season. We would just now be playing our first game. So when you think about, we've been playing now for two games for two weeks, and it's like, you know, we approached our practice differently in that first week of, normally we're doing a lot of conditioning and we're doing a lot of fundamental and we're doing a lot of, you know, just reinforcement of the skill. And we had to go right into game situation and working on, offense, defense and serve receive. And, but it does, it comes back to them. I mean, and everybody's in the same boat, you know, y'all start a little rusty and then, you know, after 3 weeks of practice and games, you just kind of get in the groove and you just, it's like muscle memory. It just eventually comes back. So.
And I know, I think a concern, maybe that concern might be too strong of a word, but an issue of potential problem coming in would be the club volleyball crossing over here with the high school volleyball. How has that worked from your perspective with the club season and the high school season going on at the same time here?
Well, honestly, we haven't had too much of an issue with scheduling or anything. I've got a lot of girls that actually they spend a lot of time on the softball field. So we've had some softball conflict here and there with girls needing to be, you know, at a tournament 2 hours away or trying to schedule practice around that. So we haven't had much of a, you know, issues so much with club volleyball. I don't have as many girls that do that. So it's mostly softball, but, you know, we're just being flexible as much as we can with our season. And, you know, I know that technically, isn't it next week, all the spring sports pick up? So I've got a couple girls that, you know, they're going to be softball players and track stars and soccer players. And so it's like we just have to, you know, give them a little grace with the scheduling. And as long as they are at a practice, regardless, I think, of how long they're at that practice, it counts as them being at a practice, mm-hmm. and then we can, you know, kind of move on. So it's different, you know. The whole year is very different, but I'm just grateful that they get the opportunity to play. And, again, they're just enjoying themselves, and so that's important. So I want them to have fun. I want them to win, but right. I also want them to enjoy what they're doing.
And that is the most important thing about this weird COVID season is just the kids get the opportunity to compete. Plain and simple, that's all that matters at the end of the day. Emily, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time. I'll let you go so you can get on the road and head over to Raymond. Good luck against the Lancers today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Emily Zimmerman, the head volleyball coach for Hillsborough. And yeah, I'm glad she wasn't on the bus and get a dropped call. We don't want that. We don't want dropped calls.
Yeah, those are always awkward.
It happens from time to time.
It does. It does. We thank everyone listening for the grace when that happens.
Hey, we need to get to another break here on Sports Saturday. Of course, we got Cardinal Baseball coming up today, 2:15 on AM 1540, FM 106.9 and 92.9. We're going to talk about the Redbirds coming up. Big Illini news, and it ain't good news in terms of Adam Miller entering into the transfer portal. And also, got some, a little fun fact on the breakaway rim invented by a man from Verdon. So we'll talk about all that when Sports Saturday continues.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize.
Thank you very much, David. So I saw this in the Farm Week newspaper this past week. The history of the breakaway rim for basketball was actually invented by Arthur Errett from Verdon. Now, he applied for this patent back in 1976. It got approved in 1982. The prototype, David, was called the Rebounder.
The Rebounder?
The Rebounder. That's a quality name right there.
Sure it wasn't called the Barkley?
Nope. The mound, what is it, the round mound?
The round
of
mound
rebound?
Of rebound, yeah.
But back in 1975, Errett's nephew, who at the time was an assistant basketball coach at SLU, he asked old Uncle Arthur if he could make a rim that could handle dunks without hurting players or damaging equipment. Now, people of a certain age, David Jenkins.
Who are these people?
Who are these people? Might not realize that the rim didn't used to be breakaway. It was just a piece of iron bolted to the backboard, and when people started dunking with power, well, backboard started shattering. And I remember as a kid, an open gym, it wasn't open gym. It was like a summer basketball camp that Coach Lofke used to always have. And for some reason, they were working in the high school gym, so we were in the junior high gym, which didn't have said breakaway rims. And one of the old guys, that's what we used to always call them, you know, players from past years would always come back and play and compete and practice.
Ripe
all
old
that.
Age of 24.
That's right. But Eddie Jones was his name. And he went up and he dunked it. And he, boy, did he dunk it. Backboard shattered. Basketball camp over. Coach Lofke wasn't real happy.
One guy ruins it for everybody.
There's always one, you know. I wish I had that problem. I wish I could go around breaking backboards. Good problem to have.
Absolutely. Was this the Eddie Jones that played for the Lakers back in the day?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So, with, you know, that is why the breakaway rim was so important. Now, the key component is the spring on the bottom of the rim, which allows the rim to snap and relieve the pressure, blah, blah, blah. Arthur Errett tried a bunch of different springs. Couldn't find the right one. He finally found one. It was a John Deere spring from a field cultivator. Perfect strength and quality. So that is what he used for the first spring. Of course, it was a green one.
Of course. Just another reason to thank a farmer.
There you go. There's plenty, but that is yet another one. Now, Arthur was a member of the Sangamon County Farm Bureau and then managed the farmer's elevator in Louder for 30 years. Now, I had never heard this story, was not aware of it until I saw it in the Farm Week paper. But that is so cool that, I mean, the breakaway rim, that's just standard. You don't even, it's just a rim now.
Right.
It's just a rim.
That's what most people know it as.
Yeah. Across the world, thank Arthur Errett. Because without him, you don't get the breakaway rim.
Of Verdon. Yeah.
That's right. He passed away in 2015 at 90. But to say his legacy still lives on would be an understatement. So when you're watching the Final Four tonight and you see some dude go in for a monster slam and the backboard don't break, thank Arthur.
Watch first dunk tonight, everything will shatter.
Yeah.
Who am I supposed to thank, Tim Mize?
Right. Sorry. But, you know, you don't see broken backboards anymore.
You don't. I don't know the last time it happened in a Division I collegiate or NBA game.
Yeah, it's rare.
It doesn't, you
know, not that
anymore.
It never happens, but it used to be, it was getting to be a common occurrence.
Yeah. Guys were trying to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't do it now, but that is just very, very neat that the breakaway rim invented by Arthur Errett from Verdon. So you got the Final Four tonight. No Illinois, of course. They've been out for a long time. Baylor plays Houston in one semifinal. Gonzaga plays UCLA in the other. And David, even though Illinois isn't playing anymore, they still managed to be losers yesterday.
Yeah. Not good.
No.
Not good. Adam Miller, the star freshman, choosing to enter his name into the transfer portal. And, of course, it doesn't mean he's gone for sure.
Right.
Because he still can come back. But he's one of, like, 1,200 guys to enter his name into the transfer portal. And not good if he in fact, does choose to leave.
And it'll be interesting to see what the reasoning is. Because with the COVID pandemic, the NCAA has granted all athletes an extra year. So, like, Trent Frazier, DeMonte Williams, seniors this year, if they wanted to, they could come back next year and have that extra year of eligibility. So, and this is, there's no information here. This is just speculation on my part. But does Adam Miller's decision to enter the transfer portal mean that Frazier and Williams are coming back? Because then you would have Curbelo, Frazier, Williams, and maybe Miller thought, where are my shots?
Yeah.
Where are my minutes? Because remember, he wasn't on the floor at the end of games this year. He would start, but he was not on the floor at the end. And you just wonder if that's why he transfers, that's fine.
More understandable.
More understandable. But if he transfers and Frazier and Williams don't come back, that to me speaks to a potentially bigger issue in the Illinois program where guys play for Underwood for a year and they're like, nah. Because Io, he's the type of guy, I think, that wants to be coached hard,
mm-hmm.
like Underwood. Not everybody wants to be coached that way. Io has that personality where he wants to be challenged on that type of level consistently. Maybe Adam Miller doesn't. I don't know.
Don't know. Well, and what's weird is Underwood actually has calmed down a bit since he first started with Illinois.
He's not a raving lunatic. He's just a lunatic.
Sure. But he admitted, I think last year he had to settle down, and that's kind of where things turned around with the program. But it's hard knowing why the guy's transferring, if he even does choose to transfer. Hopefully Frazier and Williams come back anyway, because they do need depth at guard next year anyway, because they're losing a lot as it is. Don't know what next year is going to entail with the roster. I also said this yesterday. There's been no indication of this, but I also hope that Curbelo doesn't choose to enter his name into the transfer portal, because he still could. Again, there's no reason to believe that. There's been no indications, but who knows? There's 1,200 names in there right now, so why not throw yours? What's one more?
Well, it's one more, and you don't have to sit out a year if you transfer right now. But I don't think Curbelo will, because, man, he has the ball in his hands all the time. And that's only going to increase with Io gone.
No, that's absolutely right. I was also thinking about, I wonder, because there are some enticing names in the transfer portal not named Adam Miller, I wonder if Illinois is in play for one of the top guys as well, who is a guard.
It'll be interesting to see.
It will be.
It's just a totally different dynamic that college basketball coaches have to. They spend so much time recruiting, and then even once you get the guy can just decide, which I'm fine with players being able to do. I've never thought they should have to transfer out. You know, they go to a place for
you
a coach.
You mean sit out a year?
Yeah. They go to a place where a coach, the coach leaves, and then the player is stuck at that program, and they have to sit out a year if they want to transfer. I've always thought that if the coach that recruited you leaves, you should be able to leave without penalty.
You think there should be a limit to transfer, to the number of times you can transfer?
Probably.
Yeah. But I think once is okay. I think if you start doing it like two or three times, then...
Four different teams in 4 years.
Yeah. Then you're kind of taking advantage of the system.
No, that's exactly right. So we'll see what Adam Miller decides to do, but he has put his name into the transfer portal. Cardinal baseball for you today, 2:15 a.m., 1540 FM, 106.9 and 92.9. And I guess the Cardinals kind of got Arenado in the transfer portal, major league style, the big blockbuster trade. And boy, did that pay off almost instantly, David. It was quite nice to see in the first inning Goldschmidt and Arenado both coming up. And boy, when you're facing the Cardinals now as a starting pitcher, you better have it ready to roll in the first inning.
Yeah, and it's not that he had a loud day. I mean, 2 for 4, and the two hits were big hits. But his presence was felt in that first inning, more so than anything else. Something I mentioned yesterday that they're going to have to figure out going down the line, and again, it's overreacting to one game and nitpicking, if you will, but they still, in my opinion, don't have a cleanup hitter, or at least that guy is not hitting cleanup. I still worry about Paul DeJong's ability to make consistent contact to protect Arenado, if you're going to hit Goldschmidt 2, Arenado 3. Because you could always shift Carlson up to 2, bump Goldschmidt down 3, Arenado down 4. Then you have a problem at 5, I guess. But somebody is going to have to step up and offer some protection for Arenado. Because, yeah, Goldschmidt and Arenado are very good hitters at the top of the order. But there's the chance you could end up pitching around those two guys and run into a problem at 4.
True. But if you start pitching around, you can pitch around one guy.
Yeah.
You can't pitch around 2. You know, if Goldschmidt's on, you can pitch around Arenado to a degree.
Put it this way. Arenado, or excuse me, Goldschmidt gets on with a double, they intentionally walk Arenado, then what do you do?
Well, right. But, I mean, that's just kind of how it goes.
That's
like,
true.
When you're a guy like Arenado, and Pujols was the same way, they talk about you got to protect him. There's nobody who can protect him.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, they fear Nolan Arenado. Doesn't matter who's on deck.
Yeah.
You know, you still got to deal with him.
Well, and I think Goldschmidt probably had the difference with, not that Goldschmidt was bad, has been bad since he's been a Cardinal, because he hasn't, but heck, 4 for 5 on the first day. I think that a lot had to do with Nolan Arenado hitting
behind him. Well, absolutely. It's like back in the day when they had Albert.
Yeah.
The person hitting in front of Albert, you're going to get fastballs because you don't want to walk the guy in front of Albert or walk the guy in front of Arenado.
No,
you just don't want to do it.
Yeah, they've got flexibility at the top of the order right now with what they can do with certain guys.
And you know, David, in that first game, the strikeouts were down. You know, they put a lot more balls in play. You alluded to Paul DeJong. He was able to hit a ball to the right side and get an RBI early. That's just something he wasn't doing last year. And if that can carry over the bulk of the season, that approach where, you know, we're not so much worried about trying to swing for the fences when we got two strikes, but shorten it up and, you know, hit the ball where the defense ain't. They have the potential to be a very dangerous lineup.
Well, we're still in the window where we kind of don't know what Jeff Albert's approach as a hitting coach is going to be, because it's hard to judge a hitting coach based on their first season. You really start to get to know them based on their second season, and 60 games was what his second season was last year, so even then it was tough to judge. So this year will really be the year where you see the guys and the approach. And again, it won't be guys like Goldschmidt and Arenado. It'll be your Tyler O'Neills, your Paul DeJongs, your Harrison Baders whenever he's healthy.
There is a good chance we don't see Harrison Bader again as an everyday player.
That's very true.
You know, because Carlson,
he's good enough defensively in center
field.
He's
good enough defensively. If O'Neill hits, it's going to be hard to get Bader in that lineup.
I wonder if, and again, I said yesterday I thought Matt Carpenter was done, but I wouldn't be surprised early if you see Carlson center, O'Neill in left, Tommy Edman in right, and Matt Carpenter at second base for a lot the next few weeks to start the season. Just because I think they'll give Carpenter every chance to fail.
Oh, they will.
Yeah.
They will. Yeah. Matt Carpenter. I'm over Matt Carpenter.
A lot of fans are.
Over Matt Carpenter. I've been over Matt Carpenter for several years now.
Yeah.
He's been the worst base runner in the league since he debuted.
Yes.
He can't play defense.
Nope.
And now all of a sudden he can't hit.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's not even having good at bats either.
No.
He hasn't been able to hit for a couple of years, but he at least kind of gave you, he could work a count. Now he can't even do that.
No, but he's on the roster because they decided to give him that contract extension.
It's true. Before, yeah, when they didn't need to, because he had an option.
And you know that he's beloved by his teammates, and that's
they say that.
That's an important aspect. It is, but it's professional sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't about being nice to someone. You don't owe anybody anything. Either you can play or you can't play.
Yeah.
And he can't play.
It's true.
Anymore.
It's true. He's lucky Edmundo Sosa isn't tearing the cover off the ball right now, because then you really wouldn't have a need for him.
Right. So we'll see how long Carpenter can hang on the roster this year, but we're not going to have to see him on an everyday
predictions?
Basis.
Predictions?
For what, today?
No,
or
for when, for how long he's going to be on the roster. Does he make it the entire season? Let's start there. Does he make it the entire season?
Yes.
On the Cardinals?
I don't think they can do it.
Okay.
I don't think they can cut him loose. Just don't think they have it in them. We'll see. 2:15 today, AM 1540, FM 106.9, 92.9, Cards and Reds. From Cincinnati. And with that said, David, boy, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I hope he's gone by Memorial Day.
That I would suspect July, if anything.
We'll see. We'll see. Hey, thanks to Chad East today, Matt Larson, and Emily Zimmerman for joining us this morning on Sports Saturday. For David, I am Tim. Sports Saturday is done on WQSMI, FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Carthenville, and Greenville, the station you can count on.